Provider Podcast. I'm Adam Brimelow. This week, we're looking at work underway to tackle patient flow. It's become something of a holy grail in terms of freeing up capacity and tackling delays for patients. But what are the obstacles to patients moving smoothly through the health and care system? Why are they happening? And what are trusts and their partners doing to overcome them? These questions, together with a range of effective solutions, are set out in Providers Deliver Patient Flow, a new report from NHS providers. It includes a range of case studies where trusts are working collaboratively to prevent avoidable admissions, manage demand more effectively, build capacity, harness technology, and deliver real improvements so more patients get the care they need in the right place at the right time. In a moment, we'll hear from a couple of those case studies. But first, Jonathan Holmes, Policy Advisor on the Ambulance Sector and Operational Performance at NHS Providers, who's led on this report. I asked him what we mean by patient flow.
So patient flow is a concept that has been around for a long old time, but is coming to greater prominence more recently. The NHS starts to move towards a more integrated and system-based way of working. And we're all thinking much more about the interconnections between different parts of the health and care service. So when we're talking about patient flow, really what we mean is the journey that a patient goes on from the front door of the service at perhaps A&E or in a community service through into planned care, into longer term care, into other settings, and recognizing that people's needs aren't met in isolation. There's much more of a personalized, interconnected approach now.
And how big a problem is this for the NHS?
When we think about what patient flow is and the scale of the issue the NHS has around it, it's almost, it's everything and it's nothing. Because we look at what we're focusing on and where the data draws us to, that we see the issues perhaps over the last winter. We've seen really long waits for ambulance services, very long waits for planned care, long waits in A&E. And you think you've got kind of a plethora of issues there. You've got all sorts of things. Whereas actually, if you take a patient flow approach, the scale of the issue is more singular, but it's much larger. And so I would personally see patient flow as being fundamentally important to how the whole thing works. That the reason you might have to wait a long time for an ambulance is because that ambulance is having a long wait to offload its patient A&E. It's having a long wait to A&E because the A&E is too full. The A&E is too full because there are too few beds and people are waiting a long time to be moved through. And then people are spending longer in hospital because often at the moment, people's needs are more acute. But also, we've got issues where there's not enough capacity in social care or community care. So people get stuck in hospital longer than they ought to. So you can see there, it all cuts across and it is a sort of the fundamental issue and barrier to improving operational performance across the NHS.
Well, you've been looking at the challenges and also some of the solutions across different settings. What sort of things are trusts and their partners now doing?
I've had the privilege really of speaking to quite a few trusts and hearing some of the really impressive work they're doing in what has been one of the most difficult periods the NHS has faced as it's sort of moved out of the COVID response into a period of very high pressure and challenges. I suppose we think about some of the individual actions that trusts are doing. We sort of broke them down into a range of things. So one example that really stood out to me was we spoke to the Yorkshire Ambulance Service, who are taking a population health approach and a prevention approach to planning ambulance services across their patch. So that's one really great example where they're using insights to understand demand better, and they're helping to prevent need as well as just meet it. Similarly, we sort of spoke to the team down at Barking, Redbridge and Havering, where they've been one of the forerunners in setting up a diagnostic centre. And there you're kind of seeing how a trust is investing in reaching out to communities, identifying need earlier, doing what we might call secondary prevention. And it's kind of meeting that demand at an earlier stage and doing that outreach. But then perhaps at the more sort of acute end, we've sort of seen how trusts are managing demand differently when it turns up at emergency services. So we spoke to the team at Mid Yorkshire, who are running a same day emergency care centre across their patch, and they're sort of doing much more care on the day, reducing length of stay, taking demand away from the A&E, meeting the same level of demand, but doing it more efficiently in a way that perhaps often is better for patients. And the same in the Southwest, we saw how a provider collaborative network there was able to work at scale to look at the demand they had for often really high intensity of forensic mental health care, and actually at scale, able to use their resources more effectively. And then also we saw how data and digital is being used really effectively to get people out of hospital quicker. So with virtual wards that we saw in Leicestershire and Northamptonshire, who are working as a collaborative, how they're reducing the length of stay for their patients, but also they're kind of doing more earlier in the community, moving more care, more complex care out of the hospital, keeping people at home with new tech, which is better for patients and means that there's less pressure on the beds. So a huge range of things.
Yeah, big range of approaches, different scenarios that you've looked at. Are there any overarching themes or lessons to be learned on how to improve patient flow?
Absolutely. So one that I think is a really important lesson, not just in patient flow, but almost always, is that prevention is better than cure. So if we're taking the really kind of earliest opportunity to improve health, you want to sort of be leveraging the role of trusts in preventing and identifying need earlier and reducing that high complex, high acute need. So that was a really important one. I think also looking at participation and co-production. So working with the communities that trusts serve to understand their need and what works, and also what works for the staff as well. So developing new interventions with people who use your services, but also with your staff as well. So you bring them along for the ride, so they kind of understand the value of change. And then the really, really big overarching one for me was the kind of importance of leadership and culture. I think a thing we saw come through a lot was that when clinical staff have autonomy to deliver care more effectively, and they have an operational leadership model that actually says, we're not going to take a punitive approach to making sure you hit targets X, Y, and Z. We'll worry about that, but we're going to give you the space to do the care that you want to the highest degree of quality as you can. And in working like that, then the targets almost take care of themselves. And that approach to autonomy. And then the final one that I would note was the importance of capital, of investing in digital, in infrastructure, in equipment. We're all huge there.
So, and there are real lessons there to take away from this investigation you've been doing, which is contained in our providers deliver report. What sort of support would you say is needed from the centre, from the government and NHS England, in order to accelerate progress?
So I would see there being kind of three absolutely massive things that the centre needs to start making progress on really quite urgently, because none of the issues around patient flow are new. None were created by COVID. They've all sort of built up over years of inaction or insufficient investment. So the three that I would know, each of which is absolutely huge. But firstly, capital. So across the NHS, there's a maintenance backlog across trusts around £10 billion. So £10 billion worth of things that need to be fixed or upgraded. There's also the fact that there just often aren't enough beds, so supply isn't keeping pace with demand. So that's the first, is the capital investment really needs to see that. Then the next sort of a, you might call it kind of a rate limiting factor, is the fact that there aren't enough staff working across the NHS. So the NHS has a workforce shortage, a vacancy rate of over 120,000. The government really needs to bring forward a long-term workforce plan to start kind of plugging those gaps and getting the workforce in place that we need. And then the third, which is another massive one, is the social care issue. So social care has been in dire straits for a long time. Multiple governments have not been able to address the issues in a lasting or meaningful way. So bringing forward an effective plan for reforming and improving social care and other community care models, all vitally important.
Jonathan Holmes there, describing some of the approaches where there's been real progress in addressing patient flow, including same-day emergency care, or SDEC, offering safe and appropriate emergency care for patients without admission to hospital. That can mean shorter waiting times, fewer unplanned admissions, and reduced average length of stay. The Mid Yorkshire Hospitals NHS Trust's SDEC service regularly sees more than 100 patients a day and has helped reduce demand elsewhere in the trust. I spoke to Dr. Tendi Mismanga, a consultant and head of clinical services for acute medicine, which includes same-day emergency services at Mid Yorks. And Nkazan Lovu, the lead advanced care practitioner at the service, and asked about the pressures and challenges they faced working in this environment.
In same-day emergency care, the kind of pressures and challenges we face fairly sort of similar to what you'd get in most departments that work in secondary care. It's emergency care, which means the vast majority of patients who attend same-day emergency care are unplanned. So you can't really sort of plan in terms of what sort of volume of activity you get on a particular day and when they would come in. So we don't have an appointment system. So we tend to have challenges when patients come in large volumes all at once in certain peaks throughout the day. So that makes it really difficult because you've only got a limited resource in terms of staffing, and you've got a limited resource in terms of where patients can sit or where we can assess them. So really that creates quite a lot of demand for capacity, and we may struggle with that.
And obviously one of the great strengths of this approach is the way that it can potentially ease pressures on emergency departments, obviously, in giving patients the support they need in the most appropriate and efficient way. And and that whole discussion and debate is fraught with the issue of targets, isn't it? And targets loom large over this debate. I'm just interested from your point of view, Nkazi, when you approach this work, how mindful are you of targets, or is it always about focusing entirely on what's right for patients and doing the right thing for them?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's about focusing on what's right for patients. It's about getting the patients to the right place and providing the care at the right place. It isn't so much about targets. It's about providing patient care in a safer environment, because you wouldn't bring anybody in SDEC who wasn't suitable for SDEC just to meet the targets. So we aim to make sure that the patients that we see here are patients that are suitable to be seen in SDEC, and we see them safely and discharge them home safely. So we focus really more on providing the right care at the right place, making sure that we are essentially safe for the patients.
Now, I know that you, as with all trusts, particularly when you reflect on recent months, you would have been operating under enormous pressure, and there will have been a temptation for same-day emergency care to evolve, should we say, into a sort of emergency department overspill. How do you guard against that tending?
It can be difficult to avoid becoming an overspill for the emergency department. And obviously there are several reasons why this tends to happen. And I know most same emergency cases have struggled with this. However, I would like to say we were very lucky at Mid Yorks, and we've never had a major issue with our SDEC at Mid Yorks in terms of being used as an overspill. And it's probably a reflection of the good relationship and communication between our SAMD emergency care and the emergency department. Of course, you do have occasional patients who are sent to us where they might not be suitable for the service, but overall these numbers are low and I wouldn't exactly call it an overspill. So one of the things that we've done is we've continued to ensure that there is good communication so that patients can be directed to the right place of care at any point. And we've made sure that there's continuous education and discussions about what SDEC is, what can it provide, and the importance of making sure that it's not used for any other purpose, so that it's available at all times to do what it does best. And I have to say our colleagues from the emergency department are very much on board with the need to protect SDEC to ensure that it continues to function as efficiently as possible. We've also worked together with our colleagues in the emergency department to create some sort of guidance of referring patients to SDEC, which helps with consistency, especially when you consider that both departments tend to have temporary staff or new people joining in the department who might not know how SDEC works. So when you've got some sort of guidance, they can use that guidance to make sure that they've got something to work from and create that consistency. So by taking some of these steps, we gave our SDEC a good chance of not ending up as an overspill.
I can see that the importance of providing that education, having that dialogue with colleagues. Yeah. And Nkosi, is there similarly a case with the public in terms of getting the public and patients to understand what same-day emergency care is about and what it can offer?
Most of our patients that come to our SDEC must be referred from another service. So patients wouldn't necessarily refer themselves to A&E, and this is another way how we've avoided the overspill. So in terms of education, the public, what we've done for our patients, the referring service does give the patient that information leaflet that tells them about what the service is about and what to expect when they arrive in the service. And we do talk to our patients when they are here as well to let them know what we do here and what to expect, how long they're going to be here for. And the other thing that we tend to do is use the friends and family test. So that helps us to collect the feedback from patients that have been to visit our service to see what have they found. Is it what they expected it to be? Is it what the leaflet has said it to be? How has their stay been? And what can we improve? So we haven't done a lot of informal education with patients about what the service is about. But we have obviously educated the services that refer to our service, so that they do let their patients know before they are referred to SDEC what to expect within our service.
And we've been particularly interested in looking at these issues through the lens of patient flow and the way that this type of initiative really helps to support that. I'd be interested in hearing from both of you in terms of the kind of impact that you have seen from your same-day emergency care in terms of what that's meant for colleagues, but also for patients.
We've seen a really good impact. I mean, Tendale mentioned earlier about the benefits of having the same day emergency care. We've received good positive from the patient, good patient experience. So instead of patients being admitted to the hospital to receive their care as an inpatient, we are managing to see them and discharge them home so that they can carry on with their lives at home and manage their own conditions at home. So that is a good experience for patient. And I think I would say that's been a really big benefit and a massive impact for the emergency department for the same-day emergency care. And we've engaged as well with our GP colleagues, our primary care colleagues, to talk to them about what the service is about. So that allows them to then avoid sending their patients to the emergency department. It gives them direct access to here, so that they can come directly to same-day emergency care and be seen in same-day emergency care. And so that has been a massive impact in terms of avoiding pressure and relieving that pressure and overcrowding in the emergency department. So I would say we've seen a really big positive impact ever since we've started our same-day emergency care. And we are continuing to work to collect any evidence, to collect any feedback from our colleagues, to continue to improve the service.
I think from a patient's perspective, being able to get your care within a single day rather than several days of admission in hospital is a real bonus. It's convenient, it's efficient. You come in, you get seen, assessed, diagnosed, and treated all on the same day. So that's really a big benefit to the patients. And you can avoid unplanned and longer than necessary hospital stay by making sure that you deliver the kind of care in a single day. And by doing that, you avoid a lot of complications that patients tend to get by being in hospital unnecessarily. You get infections or some decondition in hospital, which is really not ideal for most patients. And the hospital really benefits because this type of care helps to save a lot of money by reducing the number of unnecessary admissions. So it's a real bonus. And then when you look at ED, as Nkazi already said, we are suffering with a lot of overcrowding in the emergency departments because of multiple reasons, which include, you know, aging population, increasing prevalence of chronic conditions, and sometimes overuse of EDs for non-emergency care. But by having same-day emergency care, you can reduce overcrowding by providing the patients with an alternative model of care, which is not emergency department. So by having all these benefits, they really sort of have a huge impact on how we deliver the care and how the patients benefit.
Dr. Tendi Mismanga there, talking about same-day emergency care. On now to another successful approach highlighted in the Providers Deliver Patient Flow Report. This time, a community diagnostic centre at Barking, Havering and Redbridge University Hospitals NHS Trust, sometimes referred to as BHRUT, which saw substantial increases in the backlog for diagnostic tests during the pandemic. In 2021, Barking Community Hospital was selected to host a new community diagnostic centre. I asked the Trust Director of Strategy and Partnerships, Anne Hepworth, why they needed a community diagnostic centre.
Well, I guess the same as every other part of the country. So this is in response to Mike Richards' report around looking at diagnostics and really coming up with the conclusion that we were woeful in terms of capacity compared to a number of other countries and compared to the need and the growing need for diagnostics. That was the national picture, and locally just the same. In North East London, we serve a population of 2 million people. We do have six acute hospital sites, each of which have got their diagnostic capabilities, but even that's not enough. And with the growing population that we've got and the growing demand on diagnostic tests that, you know, kind of really peaked during COVID with, you know, an increased demand of like 43% for diagnostic tests, we realised that we need to do much, much more in terms of capacity. So that was the first reason. The second reason was all about access as well. So starting to think about equalising access or reducing inequalities to access. One of the things that we appreciated is that for some of the people living in North East London, then journey to a diagnostic centre or a diagnostic capability was, you know, kind of three buses. You know, it was three buses with your buggies or three buses in your mobility scooter, etc. And it was just inaccessible for a number of different people. And given the deprivation of a number of the populations that we serve, one of the things that we really need to be doing is broadening access to services. So it's those two reasons. It was kind of capacity and equality of access.
So in order to make it happen, then you need obviously to get the money and also the staff to get things up and running. How were you able to do that?
So like many places across the country, we pursued the national funding for community diagnostic centres. And so we were part of a group of systems across London, starting to work together to understand where we could best use the national resource that was coming out. So the resource to cover capital, but also the resource to cover workforce for 3 years. And so in North East London, we worked together as Three Q's Hospital Trusts, and we worked together across seven different places to really understand where we could best place that resource to maximise it, to do those things around access and capacity. And so did some really good population health management of population health analytics to understand where they could be best placed. So we use the London regional team to help us with that and to help us work through what the issues were and where the opportunities were to best place the CDC. So, yeah, I mean, it's national money that we're using, but we're using it in a way to build a sustainable workforce. And therefore, one of the things that we've done is actually open up a radiology academy so that we can really start to train and bring people through that radiology route to make sure that we've got a sustainable workforce once the national money's run out.
And what impact are you seeing in terms of patient flow, which of course is the big focus for us in terms of this providers deliver report?
So just increased capacity is great. And also we're keeping up with demand as well when demand is still growing. And so there's been a 20% increase in requirements for acute scanning. We are keeping up with that demand, and the CDC Barking is one of the ways in which we're doing that. The second CDC, North East London, is at Mile End. And so from a BHRUT perspective, from our trust perspective, we're maintaining our DMO01 compliance in the face of that increased demand. The two-week scan timetable that we need to be achieving, the targets, we're keeping within that. And despite those numbers going up significantly. So there's that. And the reason for that is we're able to protect the CDC as elective scans away from the acute scans.
So it's interesting, obviously, in terms of capacity, as you described it, and demand clearly going up. But the impact in many ways is very real and visible, isn't it, for actual patients and staff and the changes you're bringing about for them.
Absolutely. So we worked with patients to really start to design the services. So the CDC building that we are building now, we've built in collaboration with them, and patients are really appreciating the opportunity to design the services as well as use the services. So that's great. They love the fact that the CDC is at one of our community hospital sites. They don't have to come into the busy hospital site here. They don't have to fight for a car parking space because there's plenty of parking over there. The fact that it is closer to where they live. So Barking and Dagenham, as one of the three boroughs that we serve, is the only borough in North East London out of seven boroughs that doesn't have an acute site within its geography. And that's a real bone of contention for the local population and for the councillors who represent them. And we talk about it frequently. And so therefore, actually having what's seen as an acute capability, an acute facility within the borough boundaries, has been incredibly welcomed by the local population, by the councillors and by the patients, because frankly, it just saves them a huge amount of bother and a huge amount of time coming into the really busy acute site that we've got here. And similarly for staff, we run two pretty hot sites in Queen's Hospital and King George's Hospital. And so the ability for staff to rotate into the facility that we've got at Barking Community Hospital is really welcomed by them. It's just a different pace. It's a different tone. It's their own kind of piece of the world out there. And as much as, you know, productivity is still amazing. So we are running from very early in the morning until late in the evenings and also doing weekends. So productivity is up there, but it's not the same as working on a very hot acute hospital site. So they appreciate it. And the MRIs and the CTs themselves have just been really nicely built and put together. So they're actually nice, calm places to work, and I think our staff really, really appreciate that.
Anne Hepworth there from BHRUT, ending this provider podcast on patient flow. And of course, there's much more information about all the case studies, plus a commentary from NHS England's National Director of Urgent and Emergency Care and Deputy Chief Operating Officer Sarah Jane Marsh in NHS Providers Report. And of course, that Providers Deliver Patient Flow report is on our website. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and found it interesting. We'll be back soon. A reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag #TheProviderPodcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.